He woke and walked out across the dewgrass this morning, the blades all sewed up in dangled gossamer of spiders. Why him? He worked alongside his dad in the barn, swept the broom hard, and when his dad said he was growing quite the muscles, he had laughed. He might not have. Who deserves any grace? A line of cumulus white races across July, dragging gray shadows across our fields. Levi whimpers, slips his bandaged hand higher on the pillow, and I remember words of evening graces and morning miracles. Here dies another day, during which I have had eyes, ears, hands, and the great world around me, and with tomorrow begins another. Why am I allowed to? Why doesn't anyone ask that why question? Why are we allowed to? Why lavished with three, a whole string of grace days? Isn't even one grace enough? Me with child alive, thinking of faces of mothers in cemeteries. My own mama. I want to yell no. No, it is not. I want to take both fists and splinter the door with an ungrateful demanding for more. Why can't we be allowed days indefinitely? How can God ever expect us to say goodbye to the eyes, ears, hands of those we cherish more than our own? Is it because his heart awaits us at home? Because if we don't say goodbye here, when will we meet him there? Because these are the Lens words for a life. Precious in his eyes is the homecoming of his saints. Psalms 116:15. Blood seeps through the edges of Levi's bandage. I put the bottle of Tylenol back in the cabinet. I pull the pen out of the gratitude journal's coiled spine, the one lying open on the counter, always naming, endlessly naming, to 1,000 and ad infinitum, and write it slow, Levi's index finger, bandages and pain relief. That we are allowed to, a grace miracle I hardly ever notice. When I realize that it's not God who is in my debt, but I who am in his great debt, then doesn't all become gift? For he might not have. When the night sky frays today, smudged light coming up over fields, I wake Levi. Today is our date with the city hospital, an operating table, a surgeon. He's sleepy. He drags to the back door, holding a splint and bandaged hand to his chest, and I tie his shoelaces. The farmer leans against the open door, takes my hand, and I take Levi's other one. We will pray for the going, the cutting, the healing. Then it comes, this murmur, and from my lips, Lord, all the feelings since the blade and the breaking, all my questioning and asking, they swell, hot lava to the surface, and I choke it back, the thick farming hand squeezing mine. That I day after day, greedily take what looks like it's good from your hand, a child gloating over sweet candy. My voice catches hard. I've been a thief, trying to hoard away all the good. But that I'd thrash wild to escape, when what you give from your hand feels bad, like gravel in the mouth. Oh, Father, forgive. Should I accept good from you and not trouble? Job 2:10. I pray Job's words, and heat flows down liquid. What if that which feels like trouble, gravel in the mouth, is only that, feeling? What if faith says all is, I think it, but do I really mean it? I gather up Levi in hand, and the man at the door kisses us both goodbye, and we wind through the dawn dark. The radio snaps out sound bites of presidents, celebrities. Lights flicker in milking parlors, farmers at chores. I click off the radio and flip over to scripture on CD, the Gospel of Matthew. In the slumber of towns, the odd kitchen light flashes by. Jesus said. And then Jesus replied. And a voice from heaven said, my fingers wrap hard around the steering wheel. At a graying intersection of two empty country roads, I idle long, stunned. It's coming out of the same stereo speakers, like the voices of presidents and dignitaries. These are the words of God. Headlights make holes in the slate morning. I nudge Levi, gentle, awed. We're listening to God. And out of the speakers, I hear him clear. But Jesus told him, no, the scriptures say, people do not live by bread alone, but by every word that comes from the mouth of God. Matthew 4:4. I listen, and I live fully on what comes straight from his mouth. That serpent, he slithered with the lie that God doesn't give good, but gives rocks in the mouth. Leaves us to starve empty in wilderness, and we'll just have to take lessons from Satan on how to take the stones of the careless God and make them into bread to feed our own hungry souls. And I hear it straight out of the speakers on a July morning breaking, the Son of God saying there's only one way to live full, and it is by every word that comes from the mouth of God. It is all that Jesus used to survive in the desert, in his wrangle with silver-tongued Lucifer, only this, it is written. And it's the word of God that turns the rocks in the mouth to loaves on the tongue, that fills our emptiness with the true and real good, that makes the eyes see, the body full of light. I glance at the clock. Levi is to roll into the operating theater in 3 hours. The word of God whispers through the speakers. Levi drifts back to sleep. The countryside splits open, the earth unpeeled into sun. The wheat wears gold. I drive out of dark and into morning glory. I awaken to the strange truth that all new life comes out of the dark places. And hasn't it always been? Out of darkness, God spoke forth the teeming life. That wheat round and ripe across all these fields, they swelled as hope embryos in womb of the black earth. Out of the dark, tender life unfurled. Out of my own inner pitch, 6 human beings emerged. New life, wet and fresh. All new life labors out of the very bowels of darkness. That fullest life itself dawns from nothing but Calvary darkness and tomb cave black into the radiance of Easter morning. Out of the darkness of the cross, the world transfigures into new life, and there is no other way. Then yes, it is dark suffering's umbilical cord that alone can untether new life. It is suffering that has the realest possibility to bear down and deliver grace. And grace that chooses to bear the cross of suffering overcomes that suffering. I need to breathe. I roll down the window. I inhale the pungency of a passing hayfield and a bloom of clover, ditches with those altogether wild black-eyed Susan swaying in early air. I try to think straight, true as straight. My pain, my dark, all the world's pain, all the world's dark. It might actually taste sweet to the tongue, be the genesis of new life? Yes, and emptiness itself can birth the fullness of grace, because in the emptiness we have the opportunity to turn to God, the only begetter of grace, and there find all the fullness of joy. So God transfigures all the world. Darkness transfigures into light. Bad transfigures into good. Grief transfigures into grace. Empty transfigures into full. God wastes nothing, makes everything work out according to his plan. Ephesians 1:11. We pull into the hospital parking lot, and I park across from the entrance sign that reads Oncology. A mother pushes a wheelchair down the sidewalk, bald-headed son gripping a stuffed tiger. I open the door for Levi. I wear my lenses and I pray to see. Who knows when you might climb a mount of transfiguration? Levi and I sit in hard chairs waiting. The turquoise paint in the waiting room is chipped. They're in the midst of renovations, plastic draping off one corner of the room. Everywhere, transfiguring. We sit in a room with bodies broken and casted, bent over the walkers, burned, the skin dressed in gauze, the skin exposed, grafted, mottled, scarred. No one speaks. We try not to stare at each other, but I can't keep myself from saying it to God, this raw sob echoing St. Teresa of Avila's. If this is how you treat your friends, no wonder you have so few. Can I be that honest? I'm David lamenting. Oh Lord, why? Psalms 10:1. Why this broken world punched through with losses? Oh Lord, how long? Psalms 13:1. How long till every baby thrives, and all children sleep down the hall from a mom and dad wrapped up in love, and each womb swells with vigorous life, and every single cancer clinic sits empty, and we all grow old together? How long? I know a neighboring Mennonite woman folding away the clothes of her dead son, and I sit in a room full of the battered and busted, and I lament, please. And he takes the empty hand and draws me close to the thrum of love. You may suffer loss, but in me, is anything ever lost, really? Isn't everything that belongs to Christ also yours? Loved ones lost still belong to him. Then aren't they still yours? Do I not own the cattle on 1,000 hills? Everything. Aren't then all provisions in Christ also yours? If you haven't lost Christ, child, nothing is ever lost. Remember, through many tribulations, we must enter the kingdom of God, Acts 14:22. And in sharing in my son's suffering, becoming like him in his death, you come to know Christ in the power of his resurrection, Philippians 3:10. And I nod it soft, yes, Father. You long to transfigure all, no matter how long it takes. You long to transfigure all. The wrinkled man in the wheelchair with the legs wrapped, the girl with her face punctured deep with the teeth marks of a dog, the mess of this world, and I see this, all this, is what the French call d'un beau affreux, what the Germans call hübsch, aschlich, the ugly beautiful. That which is perceived as ugly transfigures into beautiful. What the post-impressionist painter Paul Gauguin expressed as le laid peut être beau, the ugly can be beautiful. The dark can give birth to life. Suffering can deliver grace. In infant psychology at the university, I learned about newborns. Shown side-by-side images of two faces, spend more than 80% of their time looking at the attractive face. So to see through the ugliness to beauty, won't I need to wear a lens? I'll need my own transfiguration to enter a kingdom where the prince is born into a manure-smeared feed trough, where holy God touches leper sores, breaks bread with cheats, where God wounds himself through with nails on a cross, and we wear the symbol as beauty. Is the Son of God nauseated by the stench of 12 years of soaked menstrual cloths when he speaks tenderly to the bleeding woman? Is he repelled by the crazed eyes, the foul talk, or bad breath of the demon-possessed man? Staggeringly, doesn't even beauty himself become the ugly beautiful? There was nothing beautiful about his appearance. Isaiah 53:2. He became ugly that we might become beauty. The God of the Mount of Transfiguration cannot cease his work of transfiguring moments, making all that is dark, evil, empty, into that which is all light, grace, full. I take to heart the words of Thomas Aquinas, who defined beauty as id quod visium placet, B beauty is that which being seen pleases. And if all the work of transfiguring the ugly into the beautiful pleases God, it is a work of beauty. Is there anything in this world that is truly ugly, that is curse? Levi looks up at the clock, counting minutes down. Levi with freckles sprinkled across the bridge of his nose, Calyx wiping his brush cut with a hand, who breathes. Boy who's been allowed the grace of two. He leans against my shoulder, lays his bandaged hand in my lap. I look down at his ugly beautiful, and I see what I am. I'm amputated. I've hacked my life up into grace moments and curse moments. The chopping that has cut myself off from the embracing love of God, who does not enjoy hurting people or causing them sorrow. Lamentations 3:33. But labors to birth grief into greater grace. Isn't this the crux of the gospel? The good news that all those living in the land of the shadow of death have been birthed into new life, that the transfiguration of a suffering world has already begun, that suffering nourishes grace, and pain and joy are arteries of the same heart, and mourning and dancing are but movements in his unfinished symphony of beauty. Can I believe the gospel, that God is patiently transfiguring all the notes of my life into the song of his Son? What in the world, in all this world, is grace? I can say it certain now. All is grace. I see through the woods of the world. God is always good, and I am always loved. God is always good, and I am always loved. Everything is Eucharisteo. Because Eucharisteo is how Jesus, at the Last Supper, showed us to transfigure all things. Take the pain that is given, give thanks for it, and transform it into a joy that fulfills all emptiness. I've glimpsed it. This, the hard Eucharisteo, the hard discipline to lean into the ugly and whisper thanks to transfigure it into beauty. The hard discipline to give thanks for all things at all times because he is all good. The hard discipline to number the griefs as grace, because as the surgeon would cut open my son's finger to heal him, so God chooses to cut into my ungrateful heart to make me whole. All is grace, only because all can transfigure. Levi reads his book, good hand holding it in lap, and I read the sacred script of pain bound in plaster, the illuminated manuscript of twisted bones, the text gilded of crutches hobbling. I wear the lens of the Word, and all the world transfigures into the beauty of Christ, and everything is Eucharisteo. And when I find Levi groan writhing in post-op, blood leaching through gauze, his tongue all thick-hot, I stroke his hair. I lean over stainless rail of the bed, and I press my cheek to his flushed red, and I ask soft, if he'd like water, and he nods. I put the straw to his lips. In early light so new, heads hovering close over a glass of water in a hospital room, we drink the sweet right out of the world. Chapter 6. What do you want? The place of seeing God. Every time you feel in God's creatures something pleasing and attractive, do not let your attention be arrested by them alone, but passing them by, transfer your thought to God and say, O my God, if thy creations are so full of beauty, delight, and joy, how infinitely more full of beauty, delight, and joy art thou thyself, creator of all. Nicodemus of the Holy Mountain. You'll want to see this. He takes my shoulders in his hands, large and field-worn, and draws me close. Oh, I fight the urge to writhe. It's not him, not his hands holding me, the whisper of his voice, his eyes inviting me now. It's just that, I'm feeling time-strangling grip, struggling to make a cathedral of the moment, to hallow it with the holy all here. It's late, and I've got an even later dinner to dish onto 8 empty plates. A half-dozen children noisily, happily, ringing the table with their hardly washed hands and silly jokes replete with snorts and grunts and dirty feet still needing bathing. And I haven't served the dinner yet. Haven't sliced up the loaf of bread yet. Haven't put away the basil, oregano, parsley, the peelings of carrots, the skins of onions, the jars of tomatoes. Still have to grate the cheese into circles, into the soup bowls. Still have to wash the dishes, sweep the floors, wash up kids, turn down beds, kneel for the prayers, weary and long and needy. My gratitude journal is buried under a mess of papers over the sink sill with yesterday's snippets of the list that never ends. Book pages turning. Child sobs ebbing. Boys humming hymns. Click of a seatbelt. Fender rattling with stones of gravel roads. Wind rushing through open truck window. Horse hooves clopping down a side road. Laundry flapping. Buggy clattering. Squeak of old swing swaying. Laughter. But nothing counted today. And I know my camera is lying face down in a cupboard, and my windows are finger smudged, and my head is right spun. And when I carry the water pitcher to the table, it leaves drops of clear on the counter, round a rim of a circle, one large in the center, and it looks like an eye. For a moment, I notice. I stare back, then wipe it away. The aping racket rises, and I feel it mount, and I almost yield to its vice, almost acquiesce, almost desecrate the space with words that snap. Can't I just see whatever it is later? But he's holding on to me gentle. He's smiling broadly. He's leaning his face into all my knotted angst, and his hands slide down my arms bold, blind love, and his thick fingers twine mine. Come. Right now? Can't he see the kids, hear the kids, feel the crush of all these kids? He's grinning silly, man-boy with a secret he can hardly contain. He leads me the impossible distance of a whole 2 steps to the windowsill. I'm transfixed. Wonder gapes the mouth open and spirits the words away. His whisper brushes the curl of my ear. When I saw it, I knew you'd want it too. Want it? Who can breathe? I'm moon-eyed and moonstruck. I turn to find his eyes, to find words. Serve dinner? So I can what? What is it exactly that I want to do? So I can run out there? He's laughing at me all wide-eyed, but I don't care, and he's used to it. He who made vows to a woman seeker and hunter and chaser. No, he didn't actually make vows to that woman. But this is the woman I am becoming, that Eucharisteo is making me, fulfilling thanks vows to God. I'm starved and the feast makes me wild, because really, who gets to touch the moon? Tonight, she's close. I might. He grins, nods go, and I breathe relief, and I remember to grab the camera off the shelf, but forget to close the cupboard, and I'm gone, out the back door, across the back lawn, apron still on. I take flight. I feel foolish, like a woman taking photographs of cheese. But I feel 4 again, the spring after we buried Amy. And my younger by only 12 months and 13 days brother, John, he and I ran whole lengths of fields at twilight to touch the sun, an ember burning up the horizon. I remember how the swallows had swooped, the flame light thick with bugs for their bills. My mama had sat at field's edge rocking my only 5-month-old sister and watched us chase, and she smiled, understanding the hoping. We ran and ran. My dad drove a tractor down the field, tilling up the earth. I am old now. Why am I after the moon tonight? I have known all these years since that you can never run all the way to the end and lay your hand up against awe. I have grieved this. Are the staid Mennonite neighbors peering out their kitchen windows to see the farmer's wife flapping across the wheat stubble? I do have shoes on. Are my own children nose pressed to the window, watching my race? The moon rounds immense, incandescent globe grazing ours. Her gravity pulls, pearl filling deepening sky, stringing me into the universe. If I race to the field's edge, earth's rim, can I stroke her lustrous curve, drink her lily-white skin. I laugh. I am still a child. She is a harvest moon aching, swaying over the golden fields, womb swelling round with glory, and she's rising away. I gather my apron close, run faster through the wheat stubble. Who am I to see glory with unveiled face? Is that what the child seeks? Is that why I escape motherhood at the dinner hour? Because I can't see the glory there, here, right in the moment? Still? And me slowing for the hunt, looking for even 1,000 more gifts, sanctuaries and moments, seeking the fullest life that births out of the darkest emptiness, all the miracle of Eucharisteo. Yes, maybe that woman child, the one who lives her life in circles, discovering, entering into, forgetting, and losing, finding her way round again, living her life in layers, deeper, round, further in. I know Eucharisteo and the miracle, but I am not a woman who ever lives the full knowing. I'm a wandering Israelite who sees the flame in the sky above, the pillar, the smoke from the mountain, the earth open up and give way, and still I forget. I am beset of chronic soul amnesia. I empty of truth and need the refilling. I need to come again every day. Bend, clutch, and remember. For who can gather the manna but once, hoarding, and store away sustenance in the mind for all of the living? An arrow of geese catch the moon before I do, black silhouettes shooting her through. I run harder. The flock lifts her higher into the night coming down, lonely cries heralding the coming autumn. They pierce me through. There at our fence line, where our wheat field gives way to foreign land, I gasp to inhale, crumple to earth. The moon and the geese wings climbs. I'm of Terra, they are of heavens. I've only come to witness. Is this why I've come? The weight of all this stark beauty crushes lungs. Mine burn. I had written it down after I had read it, that I might hope to remember it. The Hebrew word, used throughout scripture to describe God's glory, kabod, is derived from the root word, meaning heaviness. Dusk, and all the arcing dome, and the field, and the great-bellied moon, it all heaves, heavy with glory. I heave to breathe. The whole earth is full of his glory. Sky, land, and sea, heavy and saturated with God. Why do I always forget? Yeah, I'm no different than Jacob. Jacob waking from sleep before full moon rising. Then Jacob awoke from his sleep and said, "Surely the Lord is in this place." And I wasn't even aware of it. But he was also afraid and said, "What an awesome place this is. It is none other than the house of God, the very gateway to heaven." Genesis 28:16-17. This moment, this place, is none other than a gate into heaven. God's glory rains down, weighs down earth's tented heights, and grace tears through, ripping sky canvas and me clear open. Everywhere, window and gates, and I did not know it. No, I have known it, and I have forgotten it, and I remember it again. The weight of God's glory, not illusory or ephemeral, but daily and everywhere, punctures earth's lid and heaven falls through the holes. I kneel in wheat, moonstruck. Bowed at the edge of the world, Jesus asks me spun in circles, me coming too, only to lapse and to forget again. He asks soft of me, who is yet again lost, what he asked of the man born blind. What do you want me to do for you? Luke 18:41. Why have I run? A mama with children, a wife with full house, a father's child living Eucharisteo and even the hard. His eye is on me under the moon, penetrating my own shroud. His breath falls warm. He knows what I want, need, Has he called me because he wants me to do my own plumbing of the soul? What do you want? Isn't that the soul question we all need to circle back to, over and again? Who knows the answer? I feel it in my chest first, before any answer or layer of answer finds shape in image, words. For all real answers, don't they come in strata, gradations of understanding? My body knows it, the way tension drains from shoulders and a heart unknots. I loosen, breathe long. I slow. Moonlight cascades, and a smile spreads in its wake. What do you want? Why have I run? A summer of traveling to the city with Levi for follow-up visits with the surgeon. A summer of physiotherapist appointments and daily bending exercises, trying to work his gnarled joint, stretch through the scar tissue stiff. Yes, the whole of life. These exercises to break down the knotting scar tissue from the fall. A summer of pain, always the running. A summer of grace, always the revelation. Pain is everywhere. And wherever the pain, there can be everywhere grace. And yes, Jesus, I am struggling, and I get turned around. But I think I know, at least in part, what I want. If I had never run, if I had never fallen, and here, I'm not sure I would have known with blazing clarity. I may not know all that it means, but this is what I want. This kingdom laden with glory, this the pearl of great price, the field I'd sell everything to possess. This is the pearl that crams me with a happiness that throbs, serrated edge, pit open wide for more of his glory. The only place we have to come before we die is the place of seeing God. This is what I'm famished for, more of the God glory. I whisper with the blind beggar, Lord, I want to see. Luke 18:41. That's my moaning pulse. See, see. The camera. I slip the camera out of the pocket of my apron. How can this sensor, point and shoot in the palm of my hand, capture what the eyes see? The soul memorizes. I kneel low on wheat stalks at the edge, and I frame up the moon. I want to see beauty. In the ugly, in the sink, in the suffering, in the daily, in all the days before I die, the moments before I sleep. Isn't beauty what we yearn to burn with before we die? What else so ignites hot flame? Beauty is all that is glory, and God is beauty embodied, glory manifested. This is what I crave. I hunger for beauty. Is that why I must keep up the hunt? When I cease the beauty hunt, is that why I begin to starve, waste away? I laugh, because haven't I run, pursued? I must be Sehnsucht for beauty, the word C.S. Lewis used from the German. To long for, Sehn, like a mania, Sucht. I have run because I long for beauty, like a mania. A woman leaving dinner, running an apron for the cast of the moon. When I can't find it, is that why my soul goes a bit wild, morose, crazed? Strange, I hadn't even noticed that I'd been hungry for beauty until I ran for the moon. Today, frayed, unraveled at the edges a bit with dishes and dirt and paraphernalia dumped by kids. But only yesterday I had been numbering moments, counting graces. I thought I felt soul nourished. Is that it? Like an addiction, a compulsion that can't stop its seeking. Do I always want to see more beauty? More of the glory of God? Because that is what I'm made for, to give him more glory. More Eucharisteo, more. And not only yesterday, but today. Manna today, or I starve. The moon has all my gaze. God glory, heavy and mounting. I kneel here, needing to know how a hung rock radiates. Ethereal. This beauty is not natural, not of nature. This beauty is not merely form and color, but God's shining garment's hem. Beauty is the voice endlessly calling, and so we see, so we reach. Doubt the philosophies, doubt the prophecies, doubt the Pharisees, especially the ones seen in mirrors. But who can doubt this, beauty? Beauty requires no justification, no explanation. It simply is and transcends. See beauty and we know it in the marrow, even if we have no words for it. Someone is behind it, in it. Beauty himself completes. I am alive. Focus and click. Focus and click. A hunter trying to capture. And none of the shots are close enough, wide enough, radiant enough for the hunter. What is this that I feel sitting here, coursing through me, relentless, hot, ardent? I have to see God beauty. Because isn't my internal circuitry wired to seek out something worthy of worship? Every moment I live bowed to something. And if I don't see God, I'll bow down before something else. Is worship why I've run for the moon? Not for lunar worship, but for true beauty worship, worship of Creator beauty himself. God is present in all the moments, but I do not deify the wind in the pines, the snow falling on hemlocks, the moon over harvested wheat. Pantheism, seeing the natural world as divine, is a very different thing than seeing divine God present in all things. I know it here kneeling, the twilight so still. Nature is not God, but God revealing the weight of himself, all his glory, through the looking glass of nature. I told it once to a questioning son that theology is but that born of theos and logi, God and study, and theology is to study God. I'd always thought of the hefty concordances on the high shelf in the study, but isn't this, too, the deep study of the Spirit God, the revelation of God over the farm? How I want to see the weight of glory break my thick scales. The weight of glory smash the chains of desperate materialism, split the numbing shell of deadening entertainment, bust up the ice of catatonic hearts. I want to see God, who pulls on the coat of my skin and doesn't leave me alone in this withering body of mortality. I want to see God who gives gifts in hospitals and gravesides and homeless shelters and refugee camps and in rain falling on sunflowers and stars falling over hayfields and silver scales glinting upriver and sewage flowing downriver. Eucharisteo is everywhere, and I want to see Eucharisteo everywhere, and I want to remember how badly I really want to see here. How could I have forgotten how badly I wanted this, to bow down and rightly worship? It is still, stock still. One lone stem of wheat bows its head before me. Behind it, the perfect backdrop of pure moon full, pregnant with the grandeur. I reach out my hand, run my finger up its silk, slender shank. This is how. I learn how to say thank you from a laid low head of wheat, from the wind rustling glory through the dried blades of grass raised, from the leaves and the silver maple hushed odd still. I pay tribute to God by paying attention. I raise one hand high and another hand high. I bow the head down, I lay the body down. The life of true holiness is rooted in the soil of awed adoration. It does not grow elsewhere, writes J.I. Packer. I am bowed like wheat, raised like grass blades, grounded and rooted to now, And from him and through him and to him are all things, and all is his, and everything that has breath praises him. And I whisper it again, 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 remembering, remembering, remembering. Eucharisteo, Eucharisteo, Eucharisteo. Isn't he the face of all faces? He is infinite and without end, without jaw or sockets, everywhere eye. The face of the moon, the face of the doe, the face of the derelict, the face of pain. His, the countenance that seeps up through the world. Face without limitation. Face that plays in 10,000 places. All beauty is only reflection. And whether I'm conscious of it or not, any created thing of which I'm amazed, it is the glimpse of his face to which I bow down. Do I have eyes to see it's him and not the thing? Satan comes in the scales that gleamed, a thing of beauty, and he lured the first woman, and she was deceived. Beauty, the disguise, can slide dangerous. True, authentic beauty requires of us, lays claim to us, and it is this, the knees bent, the body offered in obedience. A pantheist God is a passive God. But an omnipresent God is beauty who demands worship, passion, and the sacrifice of a life, for he owns it. Do I have eyes to see his face in all things? So I'm not merely dazzled by the trinket, glitzy bauble dangling for the ogling till it flakes and breaks, and I strain for more to lie prostrate before. I rise slowly, roll face to sky darkening navy, strung with that one large pearl. I lie quiet. I lie long. August lies out. A sparrow flits low. A surprise. That moon is so white. I could lie here forever, murmuring the only language of the God glory. Gratitude. It's all so unlikely. I have never before run. I have never before stretched out prostrate. Why am I out in this evening field, lying under the moon? Is Eucharisteo opening the eyes wider, the heart deeper? Is this paradox, that giving thanks for what is, creates an appetite for more? Not for more things, but for seeking more of God. To give more glory. Looking is the love. Looking is the evidence of the believing. The moon swings higher. I remember reading it only weeks before, sitting in the surgeon's waiting room with Levi. The hospital renovation progressing slowly. The patients healing only slightly faster. Transfiguration can be the long miracle. Levi had daydreamed out the waiting room window, listened to the stories of car accidents and work injuries from the bandaged, and I had held my book. I'd read how the Israelites looked about and saw much to bemoan, much to complain about, and they began to speak against God and Moses. "Why have you brought us out of Egypt to die here in the wilderness?" they complained. "There is nothing to eat here. And nothing to drink. And we hate this horrible manna." Numbers 21:5. I had looked around at the wounded all waiting. I had turned back to the page. And what does God send the ingrates? What came to the ingrates in the Eden beginning? A slithering blanket of snakes that coil around the complaints of the Israelites. Open wide and pierce the flesh with a fang. Always, ingratitude makes the poison coarse. The cure against thanklessness's bite? The remedy is in the retina. Then the Lord told him, "Make a replica of a poisonous snake and attach it to a pole. All who are bitten will live if they simply look at it. So Moses made a snake out of bronze and attached it to a pole. Then anyone who was bitten by a snake could look at the bronze snake and be healed. Numbers 21:8-9. How we behold determines if we hold joy. Behold glory and be held by God. How we look determines how we live, if we live. A patient's name was called, and a father helped a son to his feet, and the boy leaned hard. And I had read how Jesus says, in the same way that Moses lifted the serpent in the desert so people could have something to see and then believe, it is necessary for the Son of Man to be lifted up, and everyone who looks to him, trusting and expectant, will gain a real life, eternal life. John 3:14-15. I had looked up from my book and into the face of a boy with his ear bandaged, and I didn't want to imagine what had happened. I had tried to take it in. Isn't Jesus himself saying that people need to see and then believe? That looking and believing are the same thing? That in the right inner looking, we can gain the right outer life, the saved full life? I had read it and had forgotten it, always, but I remember it now, mooning under the moon. Faith is the gaze of a soul upon a saving God. Faith is in the gaze of a soul. Faith is the seeing soul's eyes upon a saving God. The saving God of twisted bodies, the saving God of harvest moons. Is that summer's last cricket strumming lonely? The diameter of the night orb fills all the atmosphere over our farm. Faith is the seeing eyes that find the gauze to heaven torn through, that slow to witness the silent wait, feel the gold glory bar heavy in palm, no matter the outer appearance. Seeing is the spiritual life. They might see with their eyes, hear with their ears, understand with their hearts, and return and be healed. Isaiah 6:9-10. Looking comes first, wrote Lewis in The Great Divorce. First the eyes. Always first the inner eyes. Two crickets sing now in echo. That leper who had returned with thanks, his faith that gave thanks was counted by Jesus as saving faith. And now this, that faith is not a once in the past action, but faith is always a way of seeing, a seeking for God in everything. And if the eyes gaze long enough to see God lifted in a thing, how can the lips not offer Eucharisteo? The truly saved have eyes of faith and lips of thanks. Faith is in the gaze of a soul. Has his love lured me out here to really save me? I sit up in the wheat stubble, drawn, that he would care to save. Moonface glows. We are head to head. I am bare. He is bare. All I see is me. An ample hoop rung with brilliance. The moon is like a wheel of chrysolite riding up the sky, full of the radiance of the glory of the Lord. I want to be cherub, all I looking back. To be like the cherubim, with eyes all over their bodies, including their hands, their backs, and their wings. Ezekiel 10:12. To be Moses, who kept right on going because he kept his eyes on the one who is invisible. Hebrews 11:27. That is what makes us persevere through a life, to see him who is invisible. It is my prayer with the last crickets of summer. O Lord, open the eyes of my heart, the eyes of my hands, the eyes of my mouth, the eyes of my feet. I long to live all I. A gust of wind rattles hollow through dried leaves of a patch of soybeans. The leaves in the silver maple murmur of fall coming, fall coming. I feel too bared. Can I live all I and gaze on God and live? I must to believe, and so said Jesus, but I too remember. But you may not look directly at my face, for no one may see me and live. Exodus 33:20. And yet there are days where I know it in the shadows. Truly you are a God who hides himself. Isaiah 45:15. Or is it me who hides? Other times, Jacob times, I know it is the only way to be delivered from the blackness. So Jacob called the name of the place Peniel, saying, for I have seen God face to face, and yet my life has been delivered. Genesis 32:30. And yet at all times I wonder, can anyone with the oily stains of a pride-splotched heart see God? I look down at the stained skirt of my apron, washed in moonlight. And I think I can stand here. I think I can brave this beauty. Not an empty, tinny beauty, but a fierce beauty, flaming fire, who burns through the thick masks and leaves the soul disrobed. I am naked, and I am right ashamed. I know how monstrously inhumane I can be, raging at children for minor wrongdoings, while I'm the one defiling the moment with sinful anger, hoarding possessions while others die of starvation, entertaining the mind with trivial pretties when I haven't bowed the head and heart in prayer longer than 5 minutes in a week. My tongue has had a razor edge. My eyes have rolled haughty and my neck has been stiff and graceless, and I have lived the filth ugly, an adulterer, a glutton, and a grace thief who hasn't had time for the thanks. I wrap the hem of my splattered apron around a finger. I cannot raise the eye. We've read it around the table at the close of the meal, us all with Bibles open, and we've read the verse with one voice. God blesses those whose hearts are pure, for they will see God. Matthew 5:8. What am I doing out here? I'm filthy rags. Is sight possible? I've only got one pure thing to wear, and it's got made by Jesus on the tag, and the purity of Jesus lies over a heart, and his transparency burns the cataracts off the soul. The only way to see God manifested in the world around is with the eyes of Jesus within. God within is the one seeing God without. God is both the object of my seeing and the subject who does the act of all real seeing, the word lens the inner eye wears. To sit in the theater of God and see his glory crack the dark, to open the eyes of my heart to see the fountain of his grace, thousands of gifts. I have to split heart open to more and more of Jesus. Who can split open the eyelids but Jesus? He tears the veil to the Holy of Holies, gives me the only seeing I have. I have been lost, and now I am found, and I sing it softly before the flying of the flock south. Be thou my vision, O Lord of my heart. The lunar pearl overwhelms, and I am all eye to the world. Strange how joy pains. In the burn of the ache, there is this unexpected sensation of immense moon slowly shrinking and God expanding, widening and deepening my inner spaces. Is that why joy hurts? God stretching us open to receive more of himself. I ache gaze on bits and blades of creation, and all things created fade, diminish, and only the features of the Creator shimmer, magnified. My eye sees through to the heights and Him, and things beneath are seen for what they are, but finite talismans pointing up. That full moon rising higher holds me rapt. This is where I see it. God always sits here. Joy that fills me under full moon is the joy that always fills God. What I've run to brush up against, to press all my throbbing emptiness into, these heavy glory waters endlessly flood from Him, and He spills. Skirts of stars swirl through black space, and waterfalls canter over stones, manes of runaway horses, and lone mushroom tilts in the shadows of soundless forests, and God sees it all. This is His endless experience, because this is who He is, beauty overflowing. My moon wonder is but a glimpse foretaste of what God always sees, experiences. He is not a tyrant or a despot. I smile under the moon. For God is happiest of all. Joy is God's life. Don't I yearn for it to be mine? Is this why I run, answering the invitation to live in Him who is happiest of all? I'm a child again, and tonight I have run to the end of the horizon, and this time I have touched Him, and I twirl in full apron skirt, spinning hem brushing the grass heads bowed, and I laugh, joy. It's dawning, my full moon rising. I was lost, but now I am found again, Jesus, and I know what I want, to see deeply, to thank deeply, to feel joy deeply. How my eyes see perspective is my key to enter into His gates. I can only do so with thanksgiving. If my inner eye has God seeping up through all things, then can't I give thanks for anything? And if I can give thanks for the good things, the hard things, the absolute everything, I can enter the gates to glory. Living in His presence is fullness of joy, and seeing shows the way in. The art of deep seeing makes gratitude possible, and it is the art of gratitude that makes joy possible. Isn't joy the art of God? It's true what that ancient man, Irenaeus, the very disciple of the Apostle John, wrote. The glory of God is the human being fully alive, and the life of the human consists in beholding God. For all the reasons He called me to come across field, He surely called me for this. Don't I give God most glory when I am fully alive? I am most fully alive beholding God. I spin happy, and in the radiant expanse engulfed, I glimpse the endlessness of God. My desires, don't they stretch out endless like God? Desire has no end, no bounds, but fuels all living, all lungs, and I spin. Our endless desires are fulfilled in endless God. I stop the whirl, the grass head still. I can see the house lights glowing in the back bank of windows up on our knoll. I should go to dishes, and children needing baths, and stories and prayers. But I just don't want this moon to end. The desires submerge into God. I want to see God endlessly. I long to merge with beauty, breathe it into lungs, feel it heavy on skin, to beat on the door of the universe, pound the chest of God with the psalmist. One thing I ask of the Lord. This is what I seek. All the days of my life, to gaze upon the beauty of the Lord, and to seek Him in His temple. Psalm 27, verse 4. Faith is the gaze of the soul, and I want to see in.